Hello and welcome everyone to the Habs World Podcast. I am your host, Norm Sarek. First up of my three co-hosts is Sean Kayouet. Sean, how are you tonight?
I'm great, thank you. We're just 1 point out of the playoffs, so I'm pretty positive.
Positive, yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. It's the it's definitely the way our head coach is thinking when it comes to positivity. So yeah, I got to adopt that. Okay, next up is Paul McLeod. How are you?
I'm great, Norm. Happy to be here. And, you know, despite last night feeling pretty good about the team, the way they're playing, and, you know, it's kind of what I expected, but got to do some, maybe an exorcism at the Bell Center to, you know, get rid of this curse of injuries. I don't know.
Yeah, that is a possibility. I was going to bring that up, too. Okay, last but not least, though, is co-host Jonathan Rebello. Jonathan, how are you?
I have to say I'm just impressed with Justin Barron and the Montreal Canadiens' performance so far. So I'm pretty happy. The games have been, for the most part, entertaining, except for the Jersey game, a little bit dull. But, yeah, they've been fun to watch and picked up a few wins early in the year. Let's keep her going.
Okay. All right. Before we get rolling too far, I have to mention this. We're recording this the evening of October 25th, and this is episode number 102.
It is 102, and been doing a little bit of trivia on the Habs around 102 since we've run out of jersey numbers, and there are exactly zero players in 109 or 110 year history of the Montreal Canadiens that have scored exactly 102 points to start. The Canadiens played their 102nd game on the 17th of February, 1915, and they lost 6-2 to their arch rival Quebec, but not the Nordiques, the Bulldogs, on the road. And the other trivia I was able to find around 102 was that there are actually two players who played exactly 102 games in a Montreal Canadiens uniform.
Oh.
And I'm going to remind you about these immortal Habs. Well, the first one up, I'll just do them in alphabetical order, is Brett Clark. Some of you may remember him from Rajan Uhl's Reign of Error. Three goals, two assists, and 5 points in 102 games. And number 102... also, Jonas Hoglund, also from Uhl's Reign of Error, both of them 97 to 99.
Former Leaf.
Goals, 15 assists, 29 points in 102 games. So not a lot of glory around the number 102 for the Montreal Canadiens. Hopefully we'll have better luck next podcast with the number 103.
But you confirm that no one's ever worn 102 before.
Yes.
All right, guys. Yeah, so let's see. Habs record since the last podcast. Well, yeah, well, as Sean, as you already mentioned, they're at 500 right now, correct? So they've had an interesting start to the season. They had that overtime loss against Toronto. Then they followed up with the home win against Chicago, loss at home against Minnesota, which is a bit of a stinker, especially since the Wild only dressed 19 skaters. Then two wins in a row against Washington and Buffalo, and then sadly, last night's loss to New Jersey. So I'm going to start things off with, although it's kind of early in the season, I thought it'd be interesting for each of us to talk about which player you'd pick as an early standout and an early disappointment.
Well, I think I'll start then, if that's okay. And I'll start with Justin Barron.
What could have gave that away?
Yeah, I'm really happy he made the team out of camp. He's scored a couple goals early here. Really like how he's jumping into play, and I think he's been well above par in the defensive zone. So I think, you know, have him having the confidence of making a team out of camp this year, starting up with a big club, he stepped up quite well, and, you know, he's going to be asked to do a lot more here now that Savard is out long-term. So he's going to be playing inflated minutes. And so far, so good. And I guess I think just last night he equalized the pace, or maybe was near it, on PK Subban's goal pace for a young defenseman to score goals for the Canadiens as of recently. So, I'm impressed with him. And that'd be my pro happy guy of the early start to the season.
Okay, that's a good one. Yeah, Barron's one. I was surprised to read that bit of trivia, too, that he was first Hablu liner since PK Subban to score six goals before their 22nd birthday. So that's impressive, especially considering the group of youngsters they've got right now. Although I guess Caden Gooley has the chance to at least match that.
Yeah, another band-aid.
Yeah.
And after a rough preseason too, Barron, because I know people were down on him. That's why he didn't start. But goes to show you what preseason means. Because, I mean, I don't want to jump into disappointments right now, but Josh Anderson looked great in the preseason. And anyways.
Yeah. No, that's good.
Yeah. I mean, so my promising player is Sean Monahan so far. Because 58% on faceoffs, 5 points in six games. You know, he makes just under $2 million for 1 year. So if you retain 50% of that, it's a $1 million cap hit for a team in the future. Let's say he stays around, you know, a half a point a game. Let's say that, I think that's realistic, assuming he stays healthy and maybe around 55% on faceoffs. I think you might get a first round pick from a team. I wouldn't be surprised. Like a contender, like the Avalanche need probably another center. I don't know who else, but yeah, I mean, it's every team needs a center, but he's really he's looking good. Let's hope.
Yeah, I love the Sean Monahan thing. I can't believe he didn't get a star in the Capitals game. He was the best, I thought, the best player on the ice for the Canadiens outside of maybe Jake Allen, and he didn't get a star in the Caps game. It was crazy to me.
Yeah. Given Kent Hughes' negotiating history, I wouldn't think if Monahan keeps playing this way and stays healthy that a first-round pick would be outrageous. Might even be first-round pick plus. But let's get to the trade deadline healthy before we start speculating on that one.
You guys are both selling at the deadline, eh?
Maybe. I try to be optimistic, but every time I try to get extra optimistic, somebody else gets hurt. So I'm trying to temper it.
Good choice.
For me, picking the standouts actually a little harder than I thought. Obviously, I love the way Monahan's playing, and Barron's been great. But I think one player that doesn't get enough kudos for what he's doing right now is Jesse Ullinen, because he's suddenly gone from a fairly one-dimensional kind of offensive player to a really good, or at least a decent penalty killer, considering he's only been doing it for, you know, whatever, how many, five games we've played this season. Him and Jake Allen have played really well together on the PK. So I would pick him, or maybe Tanner Pearson, who's, I know I'm not supposed to pick two, but I got to mention, give a shout out to Pearson, because, you know, if I could shoot the puck like he does after wrist surgery, sign me up, right? You know, he's surprised me with this. That the other thing about Pearson is I heard an analytics bit on TSN 690 the other day, and they said that Pearson is actually at peak speed going the same rate as Josh Anderson. So that either means that Pearson's a lot faster than we expected, or one of the reasons why Anderson's being a little bit disappointing so far is he's not going as fast as he could. I don't know which one of those is true, but it's
and Pearson is on course pace for 41 goals too. So, getting a 41 goal score for a third round pick and a backup goalie is a pretty good trade. If that works out like that,
actually, we got the third round pick. They just got the goalie.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah,
we got the 41 goal score and the third round pick.
Okay, that'd be pretty nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd be kind of amazing to see him score 41 goals, but I'd be pretty happy with 15 or 20.
I'd be happy with 11. Would be too.
For sure.
I'm surprised he's never actually hit above 25 in a season, which is surprising considering looking at his shot and stuff. And he's played for some good teams. I mean, he was playing with the good Kings teams, right?
Well, he was on that 70s line, right? With Toffoli. Who was the third guy?
Oh, I think it was Carter.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, though. Okay. Wow, you guys picked some good ones, and I was going to mention Pearson, but that's fine. That's fine. No, that's fine. And in fact, in Pearson's case, I'd even make a case that maybe he even deserves some time up on the first line. Although they've been jumbling it a little bit, I don't think Harvey Pinard's working as well as I was hoping he would. But okay, I'll pick New Look for my surprise player. Not so much surprise, I guess, just an early riser. I mean, considering he was stressed, I mean, he played an excellent first game, obviously. That line with with him, Doc, and Slepkovsky, which and I heard a great line name for it that somebody used, and it was the New Kids on the Dock. That's it. I thought it was pretty good. So for him to quickly adapt and score a couple of big goals in that first good game was really impressive. But then when he had to shift out of that comfortable wing position over to the center one after Doc's injury and still make things work. Yeah, that's also been quite impressive. Like there's little times with New Hook's game where his defensive awareness serves him well when he's a center. I'll say that. Like he's made some smart plays at times, and you know, obviously his speed is great. I mean, man, if he could teach Pearson how to improve his first couple of steps, that would be impressive too, because that's the only thing to me, that's the knock against Pearson. His first couple of strides are just terrible. Once he's going, he's pretty good at moving, but yeah. New Hook definitely on the plus side. Do you guys want to go into or mention anybody that you're a little bit disappointed with, or?
We can do that in a second, but nobody mentioned Jack Eye. And I do want to as well say, you know, he's had a great start to the year, in my opinion. And actually the way, just to reflect back on game one against the Leafs, how he was sat out for like 17 minutes. And then within his first shift or two back, that back check he did to separate the Leaf player from the puck and turn the puck up ice in like one foul swoop was very impressive. And I'm just thrilled that the Canadians signed this kid to try out and let him come to training camp, because what a free addition he's been. And I love everything about him. So Arbor Jack, I keep doing what you're doing. But yeah, now it's time to dump. So who wants to shit on somebody first?
Oh, there was also, nobody mentioned Jake Allen. I mean, we have to give kudos to him. I mean, some of the 10 Bell saves he was making in the, what game was that against the
Capitals?
The Washington game. I mean, it was ludicrous what he was doing. And he's got a 930 save percentage in three games played. I mean, this is, I think he's just propping up his value. I mean, they're still got three goalies on the roster. So clearly they want to move.
Now, Sean, you and I were chatting outside of the podcast, though. What does Jake Allen have which hurts his ability for Montreal to trade him?
17 no trade clause, which means?
Which means all of the Canadian teams plus one city in the U.S. he hates. So you have your choice of there, Columbus or, I don't know. Where else does everybody hate to go play? Columbus, Detroit's kind of exciting now. Buffalo's kind of exciting. Those would be the other two places I would say the players would avoid in recent times. But yeah, Arizona. So maybe one of those two. Columbus or Arizona probably plus one of the Canadian teams. So Allen probably can't go to the Oilers, which stinks. Yeah. Because the Oilers could kill for a goalie right now.
Well, yeah, but the Oilers also still need defense. Yeah, I think
Allen. Connor McDavid back.
I would see Allen, you know, wanting to compete, so not wanting to play in front of, you know, a small other than a junior B game in Canada crowd in Arizona. So I could see Arizona being on his list.
Okay. All right. Well, for early disappointments, then I'll pick on Brendan Gallagher for the first three games of this season, because really I can't fault him for the last three games.
Are you? I would have picked him for the last three seasons, not the first three games.
Okay.
It's the first time he's been healthy in three seasons.
There's that. Yeah.
Oh, he's healthy and he skates like that? Wow. That's very, very disappointing.
Actually, again, that's referring back to that same analytics piece I heard on TSN 690, which came out of the company run by Shane Kelly and Aaron Ward's does work for them. Forget the name of them. They used to be Edge something, but they have to change it because NHL came out with NHL Edge. Anyway, they said that Gallagher was hitting up to 22 kilometers an hour in his
car before the game.
No, on almost half of his shift. So he has an awkward bent over, you know, crunched gnome skating style. However, it's not as ineffective as it looks.
Well, yeah, because it looks like I love Brendan Gallagher and I love that you brought him up, Norm. What he's done for this franchise and that he's like what he's done to his body, I feel so terrible for him. But he looks terrible out there. Like he looks so far behind the play. And yes, he scored two goals, and I love where he scored the two goals from. Like both of them, within like inches of the goal line. Like it's just pure Brendan Gallagher hockey. But
one was a Rod Brindamore goal. Eh? Like,
yes, exactly. Yes. Just hacking and whacking. and I love Gallagher, but like he shouldn't be playing. He definitely should not be playing game in, game out, back to back games. You could see against New Jersey the night after the Buffalo game. Yeah, again, I know that he scored a couple goals, but his body can't take that. He needs time off. And this is when Montreal should be taking advantage that they're on a team pressed right up against the cap and using all, 23 players that they're carrying. Because Gallagher can't handle it, I don't think, anymore.
I think he's going to get better the more he plays, as long as he doesn't get hurt again. But a couple of his injuries were getting hit by Shea Weber's slap shots, or actually one was Johnny Boychuk. So, I mean,
right.
You can't really do much about that if you're going to hang out in front of the net. I mean,
yeah, that's true.
My disappointment is Suzuki. It's just
– Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Doesn't look like there's anything happening there.
Looks like David out there.
What's that?
He looks like David Suzuki out there.
Yeah, he's not making good decisions with the puck. He's not setting up his line mates. He's not scoring goals, and his defense is just meh. So I don't know. Somebody said, is it time to split up Caulfield and Suzuki? Maybe for a couple games, see if it gets them going. But we already know that Josh Anderson on that line doesn't work. I liked Harvey Pinard there better than Anderson, but again. You need something. You need a little bit more. Like, I'm the last person to be, pro more bigger. But in fact, you need a little bit more size on that wing.
You do. You're right. You're right, Paul. You need more size.
I would try Pearson up there. I'd even bump Slafkovsky up there and see what he does for a game or two. Why not? Not going to hurt his development. If you're going to keep him there, you may as well play him in a top offensive role and see what he can do. He's been playing reasonably well. Yeah. So
I think Suzuki, it's going to sound harsh, but I think he needs to take a long look in the mirror, because either A, he's hurt, right? And at this point, F your streak, because it means nothing. You're never going to catch Jarvis. Even if you did, it's meaningless, right? You're not going to win cups like Jarvis. Like it's like a Patrick Marleau. Like, oh, wow, you played a lot of games. You suck. Like you're never that good. So sorry, Suzuki, you're putting yourself ahead of the team, if that's the case. If not, if you're just playing poorly, then just you're the captain, man. Just kind of.
Well, he already did own up in the press to the fact he's not playing well, and he needs to do more.
True.
He's acknowledging it, and he knows. Yeah. And him and Marty, it's public that they've had some conversations, and yeah, I agree with Sean. If he is hurt, then it's crazy that he's not taking care of his body, because this is in the season where Montreal is guaranteed to make the playoffs. It's crazy for him to be playing if he's hurt.
Because last year he hurt the draft position because he played hurt. At some point, I get you want to put yourself out there for the team, but you're hurting the organization.
But again, they revamped the medical staff because of the injuries. You can't have
that's going well.
Well, the medical staff can't prevent, David Savard getting hit 17 times with slap shots and one of them hitting him in the arm, but
yeah.
And the doc thing, he just got his leg tangled up. I mean, no amount of conditioning is going to keep you from a fluke like that. But my point was, is that the coaching staff has to take some responsibility. If he actually is hurt and he's laboring like that because he's hurt, he should be sitting. Right. And that's a coaching decision.
That's true. Marty makes the lineup, right? That also is definitely a factor as well. So, Marty's the one who writes the lineup in.
Yeah, I haven't heard that he's hurt, but if he is, then there should be more communication between the medical staff and the training staff and the coaching, and the coaches should be holding them out. Yeah. They're making the right decisions, not pulling Joshua up from Laval because he's had a hot streak. Not picking up Mayu instead of putting in Lindstrom because they want to prioritize development. Well, playing hurt is going to hurt your development and hurt the team and isn't going to help anything. So stop it.
Yeah, you guys brought up the two guys I wanted to talk about for poor play. I would have brought up Savard too. I know that he's stalwart defensively, but he's out now, so it's none of our concerns now at this point.
So I have a disappointing player. I was going to pick Anderson, but then I realized I don't have any expectations for him because he's been like this his entire career, so he doesn't disappoint me. He just is what he is. So my disappointing player is actually a player that is an ex-player. He's retired. It's Alex Burrows. fix your effing power play. What are you doing? We are getting scored against the more than scoring on, it seems. Like, it's just like, it's ludicrous. At some point, take Josh Anderson off the first wave. Good player on the rush, good player on the counter. If he has the puck on his stick for more than 2 seconds, he has to think. Terrible player. Can't one time it, whatever. Take him off the first unit. Do something new. Yeah. Put Newhook there. Put Slefkovský there. He's actually been looking good on the second unit. He can actually make passes. I don't know. It's just like, do something different. This drop back to a player that's skating behind it, it's not working to enter the zone.
Yes.
What if I said to you, like to kind of spin that around, Sean, just look at it from the other side. Would you argue that I would argue that the Canadians probably have as their first unit power play, probably the least in the bottom five in the league for skill in that five man unit? I would say 25 to 27 other teams would have at least two more, more superior elite puck carriers.
Well, you know what? I knew we were going to be talking about this, so I did look that up. So as of today, the Habs penalty killing is ranked 19 in the league, which surprised me. It's at 75.8%. Their power play is number 18, and it's 16.7%. So together, it's still not there's that magic number where most teams tend to combine those two numbers, and if they don't make at least 100%, then it's a failing grade. Basically, you want to be in a superior position if you can have 100% between the two or more.
I'm just saying the skill of the five threes.
So what is the league ranking for the Canadians power play?
I think you said 18th.
It's 18th overall. Sorry.
Yeah. What I'm saying is, like, I think the Canadians power play is incredibly frustrating to watch. With that constant drop back play, it feels like it takes so long to enter the zone. And a lot of better teams with more skill players, and they don't have to necessarily be like, when I say skill players, I don't mean like the players that score the most points, because it's just there's some guys in the league that can just stick handle the puck into the zone, gain the zone, and then, you know, like make a pressured pass or hold it and protect the puck, but they do a really good job gaining the line. And then setting up, where Montreal is still doing that drop pass thing. That I know there's still a few teams that do it occasionally, but it seems like that's Montreal's only play to gain the zone. And if it doesn't work and the other team plays aggressive, Montreal just gives the puck up too early. And they seem to lose every first face-off of the power play. They got to find somebody that can win some of those draws.
But the Monahan's out there, right? So he's pretty good. But I don't know. I think it's a coaching thing, because the drop back, that's a coaching decision.
Yeah,
but I mean, you still have Suzuki on one side and Cole on the other side. So you had the classic play, which they do all the time. They're telegraphing it. Is Suzuki goes in, fakes a shot, and he passes to Cole. But I don't remember Suzuki actually taking a shot on the power play. Is he actually fooling anyone right now? Because he hasn't.
Because he doesn't shoot.
Exactly.
He was last year at the beginning of the year, but
he stopped doing that.
Since mid-season last year, he hasn't been shooting on the power play, which is a problem. And really, I see that the problem is not the drop back pass. The problem is it's always a drop back pass.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. If you're being obvious about what you're doing, it's going to be easier to defend. Right.
Yeah, I mean, correct. That's why Matheson scored that goal last night, because the Devils thought they were going to do the drop pass on the 6-on-5. And then Matheson's like, oh, you're just going to give me the lane right down the middle. Forehand, backhand, forehand scores.
Yeah, that was impressive.
I really liked the third period from Matheson last night, not just the goal, but the couple of forearm smashes he did to the guys getting in his way when he was going with the puck. It's like, oh, you want to interfere with me?
Yeah. And, you know, as good as he is throughout the entire game, I don't think he's the best power play quarterback on defense either. I don't see a lot of quick passes and stuff.
No, but I agree.
You got to change even try the classic dump it in. If you've got Josh Anderson on the power play, all he does is skate really fast, really straight, dump it in, get him to go after the puck and tie it up a bit. Do something
different. Or hammer the defenseman.
Exactly. That's what I was just going to say, right? If you're having trouble getting the puck, Anderson will make them gun shy. It works in the playoffs. It worked in the playoffs last time we were in there. He was just a missile smashing defenseman, and they got gun shy. It will help.
Yeah.
But I 100% agree with you, Sean. Newhook should be on the first wave of the power play, because he is that guy who comes in with blazing speed, who can gain the zone and keep possession, et cetera, et cetera. And even if he dumps it in, he can often get there before the defenseman. It's just, I don't know why they don't change it up.
Yeah. Yeah, those are good points, guys. Like, they really are too static. I'm only trying to adopt Coach Marty's positivity by just using the, or by putting those numbers out about them being number 19 and 18. I'll just add that I'm pretty sure those numbers are better than they were last season. How about that?
Oh, yeah.
But definitely. They still need improvement.
This is one time where.
And it's small sample size still.
Yes. Very small.
But it's not good. It's, what was the 5-on-3? What game did they have like 2 5-on-3s in a row? And they had one in overtime too, a 4-on-3, and they didn't do anything.
Toronto.
Yeah. I think you're right.
So, but the thing is, 18th, if I'd be less surprised if you said they're like 30th, because it just seems so ineffective. So it's funny how sometimes the analytics and the eye test just don't match up at all.
It's the curse of getting rid of Markov and not bringing him back for those whatever 15 or 20 games so we could get to 1,000.
Yeah.
My son said, "Dad, when was the last time the Canadians had a good power play?" And I said, "When was the last season Markov played for us?"
That's the truth.
Yeah.
Those power plays with him and Streit or him and Surrey or him and Weber, it just goes on him and Subban. Like it just,
yeah, it was always him though, because he could pass the puck properly.
Yeah.
And when you have a threat to shoot from the back end, it opens up everything down low. So when you have Markov who can thread the needle to the guy on the half boards or a guy on the point, it creates so many more options for guys to score. And yeah, they don't have that now.
But it's not just the passing, it was the deception. They didn't know where it was going. Yeah. Hence,
right.
Right. And that was before the drop back pass, and he could thread it to a guy in a neutral zone that was going in, right? Like he was just so good at everything.
Yeah,
yeah. Not to mention knowing when to pinch. Like he was so good at that.
Yeah.
What about you? Bring him back next year. Bring him back next year. 45 years old, 10 games to start the season. Let him get to 1,000.
Did you have a disappointing player, Norm, that we haven't mentioned?
Oh, I thought I'd mentioned him already.
No, Norm did Gallagher. Norm said Gallagher.
I did Gallagher.
Oh, you did Gallagher. Oh, well,
I did for the first three. That's okay.
Yeah. And Paul did Suzuki.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so I think we've kind of exhausted that. I wanted to, and since we kind of touched on some of the injured Habs players, I figured I might as well just list it out. And I wanted to ask you guys for some updates too. So obviously we know Kirby Doc's season is gone. What did he last? Four periods or five, and now four. He's gone for the season. Four, okay. Caden Gooley is in a day-to-day situation or game-to-game situation, I believe. And now we know as of yesterday, they announced David Savard is out 6 to 8 weeks because of that fractured hand. And then there's also the two prospects, David Reinbacher and Emil Heinemann. Both have had injuries, and I could use some help because I didn't have time to really look and see for those two prospects if there was any news about them or what the injuries were or anything more than that.
I think David Reinbacher was a knee or foot. It was some lower body thing, I believe.
Yeah, but it wasn't serious.
Yeah, minor knees and Reinbacher. A few weeks maybe. Heinemann got is concussed. He got the referee or linesman was in the wrong position and for some godforsaken reason tried to jump over him and ended up smashing him in the head with his knee. The linesman, and he's concussed. And great. Also, I heard Lane Hudson. I don't know if he's back, but he was hurt as well.
Yeah, he got concussed as well.
Oh, okay. Now that I did not hear, but when I was looking up his stats the other day, I noticed he had played one fewer game than the rest of his teammates. So I was a little concerned about that. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't see it, but it doesn't bode well for the future if he's starting to get smashed in college, right? So.
No.
Yeah. Hopefully, it's good. Just a shitty college player that was taking advantage of. There's no fighting in college, and once young Lane gets to Montreal and has the sheriff patrolling things, I don't think anyone's going to be touching Lane Hudson. Or, yeah, they might, but then the sheriff will be putting them in a body bag. So
that would suit me fine. Yep.
The Doc thing hurt my prediction because I said that he would surpass Suzuki. And the way Suzuki was playing and the way he started his first game could have happened a lot sooner than we thought. But
yeah.
Yeah.
I think if he hadn't got hurt, it might have happened already, honestly.
Mm.
But, you know, c'est la vie.
Yeah, unfortunate. Well, maybe Lane Hudson's concussion is linked to some sort of fluke situation like Heinemann's. Like, we can hope for something like that.
I hope so.
and that it's not serious.
Speaking of prospects, how's Joshua Waugh doing?
He's only small sample size.
He's okay.
leading the NHL in scoring. I love that he got a hat trick. It's really great that he's having success so early playing with all men. And I guess, you know, we expect him to play well based on his pedigree of, you know, being a late riser in the queue and having some success playing on the world stage with Team Canada. But it's great to see him leading the AHL in scoring and putting up a hat trick too, not just secondary assists. He's driving the offense, which is fun to see. And I would imagine that the Canadians probably had a deep conversation with him and a lot of the prospects about not calling them up too soon, no matter how they performed, because obviously with Montreal having called up both the forward and the defenseman now already this year, and not be players that are performing in an excellent way, like Logan Mailloux is also playing well down there, from what I understand, but to not call Joshua Wapp, I would imagine they probably said to him, you know, even if you score 30 points down there in the first five games, we're not calling you up for X amount of time. And I think it's fine to let him really get his feet under there and learn how to be a pro and then come up and help the Canadians. Because even though he's excelling at the AHL level, it doesn't really mean it that he's going to do great in the NHL level. But it is wonderful to see him having that early success.
Well, he's been a player who's pretty much constantly improved since his draft year. And I agree. Like, well, they called up Armia. They haven't played him yet. So that doesn't make me sad. But if they called up Waugh and he was sitting in the press box or getting 5 or 10 minutes a night, that would be disastrous for his development. So I'm quite happy to have Yoel ride the pine in Montreal and Joshua Waugh continue to score in Laval.
Okay. Well, if he's still leading or among the league leaders for the AHL, do you think he might get a call up, say, by midseason?
I do.
Yeah. If he's still producing like that by midseason, I would think he'd be on the list. I hope they don't call him up too soon. I mean,
actually, when I was looking at his, like, thinking of players that he reminds me of is, you know, he's not that big. He just does a lot of things well. Like, he scores goals, but he's not a sniper. Technically, he's a good playmaker. We clearly see that it's, if you watch him play, it's all smarts, right? Him knowing where to position himself. Not the best skater. It reminds me, and the production in junior reminds me a lot of Claude Giroux. And Claude Giroux had started in the AHL, and he had 34 points in 33 games. Then they called him up Philadelphia on a really good Philly team that actually made the playoffs. You know, those Jeff Carter, Mike Richards teams. And he just stuck around. And I could see that for Waugh, for sure. I mean, at some point, you can't deny him. You can't, like, you have to stay there for the entire year. No, I mean, I'm better than...
If he's point of game pace after 30 games... That's a lot more work to do for him, especially he's never played. He's never consistently played 3 and 4 games a week like he's playing right now. You know, he was playing in junior. And maybe there'd be some compressed schedule with doing some international stuff. But he's used to playing 2 games a week. Sometimes they play a 3 and 3, but mostly 2 games a week and then having 5 days off of the body to recover and only playing 60 games. So we'll see under the compressed schedule how many points he has in late December, early January.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, those are good points. I hope that he can keep it up, and we'll see. Maybe there's a chance we'll see him this season. Joel Armia, you guys probably remember what I had to say about him last podcast, so I'm not going to repeat that. But the fact that he's called up, I in a way, it also kind of gives a bit of a nod to the fact that one of the comments I remember coach or the GM, I can't remember which, saying is that he was hurt during training camp or exhibition, so he didn't get much of a chance to show what he could do. So at least they're trying to be a little more fair to him, Armia, that is. But if he's going to stay off the lineup, I won't be sad.
I would actually play him. I don't like I don't like the way the penalty kill is looking and stuff. And at the very least, he brings that. And I think he could play his second unit power play better than Gallagher.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would take Armia in both those roles over Gallagher. Yes.
I don't know who you'd sit exactly, like, because Ylinen's playing well, right?
You mentioned Ylinen, and I'm not a big Ylinen guy, but that goal he scored against the Leafs was pretty spectacular, and he has been much more physical. He's more engaged and playing on that fourth line with Jake Evans, and even Pezzetta now on that fourth line. I think they're a nightmare to play against. They're all like, Pezzetta is not slow. he moves and he hits everything that moves, and that's annoying to play against. So I like that fourth line the way it is right now. So yeah, I wouldn't touch that. You know, I think the fourth line was the best line they had against Jersey last night. It was the only line that had any energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Someone's bound to get hurt, but I think Armia could bring something, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that might happen, and maybe that's going to be the role for him. And, no, and don't forget,
Armia's going to play a game in the next 2 weeks, guaranteed.
What we forget, because he's been so frustratingly ineffective, is that when he's actually on his game, he's a puck possession monster. Like
he's great in the playoffs. He's got a huge ass.
Yeah.
In fact, he could be the big winger you want with Nick and Cole.
Yes, that's what I was just going to say. If he's skating and moving, right? All he doesn't have to score. He doesn't have to do anything. All he has to do is go get the puck back for them and give it to Caulfield or Suzuki.
Yeah. Hmm.
Right? There are lines that work like that, where there's one guy who goes and mucks and the other two feast.
Right.
Could work.
Yeah, and keep in mind, too, Dvorak is scheduled to come back in early November, so there's a chance that he'll be inserted back into the lineup, and we can scramble things around a little more.
Yes, that will happen.
Do you shift Newhook back to wing, or do you put Monahan on the first line? Because he's another big body
depends on if Newhook's still scoring and driving offense. Because the only thing that matters in that situation is Newhook's offensive ability. Because now the Doc's gone, if he's able to drive a line offensively, then you got to keep him going at center.
That's a good point. Yeah, it's hard to say. Monahan would look good on that wing, though, on the first line.
Well, that's why Monahan's so valuable for a contender, right? He's so versatile. Mm-hmm. First line winger, second line center, third line. You can put him pretty well anywhere. Penalty kill, power play.
Yeah.
The other team, I thought of the Avs, but the other team that could really use him that's actually off to a hot start is Boston. And I know you don't want to trade interdivision, but they need a big, big needed center, and he's pretty much a Bruins player with his size and his two-way ability and stuff. But, you know, face-off, that's everything you've lost with Bergeron, obviously at a lower level.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah, I hate the thought of trading to Boston, but mind you, that rookie that they got at center has been doing really well, that Poitras, I think. Poitras, okay. Yeah. Somebody's made the comparison to Bergeron. I mean, I know it's really early to do that, but they just said in terms of his style and the way he tracks the game and thinks the game, there's a strong comparison there. So I don't want to dwell on the Bruins. Okay, I wanted to mention too that it was interesting to notice that the Habs are leading the league in something called penalty minutes. This is something that they should try and fix, or should they try and, you know, become the next bad boys of the NHL for the season?
Well, it is a little bit inflated with the penalty minutes of Jack Eye and Anderson. You know, they got some 10-minute misconducts, right? So that's, I think that's the difference there. That inflates those numbers significantly. I know they have been shorthanded a lot as well. But yeah, I would just say that means Marty's running an undisciplined team. You know, that really is what it boils down to if they're being shorthanded that often. The other thing I have to say, I'm watching several games around the NHL to start the year. A lot of young referees are calling things very tight. And, you know, while I'm watching the game, I get very angry, but they're probably given a directive. You know, they're new guys in the job and they want to stay up in the NHL. So I'm sure they follow the new directive of the, the GMs and whatever direction they're given about, you know, new tighter restrictions. I'm sure they're trying to call it closer to the book, but I've watched that TJ Luxmore ref a few games this year and that whatever it is, Markovich, and they're awful. Like they call so many penalties and to me, it slows the game down and really takes the flow out of the game. But Montreal's just got to be more careful because they're calling every small little clutch and grab.
Well, I think it's partially too, once one team is all over the news and all over everywhere with taking so many more penalties than everybody else, I think there's some unconscious bias on behalf of the referees. I'm not saying they're actively biased, but I think they're looking a little bit more at Montreal. I mean, look at that penalty that Barron got last night. He got a cross-checking penalty. He didn't even actually touch the other player. Remember that?
You know, I like that you said that, Paul, because I think that actually can work out in an advantage for the Canadians by the end of the year. It's nice to be the penalty minute boys early, because then it's like, oh, they do a lot of crazy stuff. They're really, you know, doing breaking the rules a lot. And then when there's a small violation later, they're like, ah, that can't be it, because these guys really break the rules. Like kind of the way the Bruins would be with the Canadians at the start of the playoff series. They'd be calling everything. But then, you know, you start to do it enough all the time, they're like, well, that can't be a penalty, because everything can't be a penalty. And then you can kind of get away with murder.
Well, maybe.
It's just, would you allow a penalty challenge in the if you're the
NHL? No, it's too slow. Too slow already. No.
Okay. I mentioned this before, but I like the way rugby does it. That the referee, if they're not sure of the call, can ask for the TV, the TMO, the television match official, to confirm their or overturn their own ruling.
Yeah.
So.
The only way to do it, I think, would be to change, like if you wanted to be able to review penalties, you'd have to change the commercial breaks set up in the NHL, and they have to, like, anytime there was a challenge, that's when you go to commercial breaks, not at the, 14, 10, and 6-minute mark. Like, you know, there would be a significant increase in the number of challenges on penalties. So then you'd have to use those penalties as times to go to commercial. And, you know, sometimes the commercial breaks might be 20 seconds when it's a short one, but maybe there'll be a 3-minute delay for a long one. And, you know, the TV's smart enough now, you could run a thing saying underneath, you know, a little banner on the commercial saying, play still under review, play still under review. So that way you keep the person hooked on the channel, you know.
Yeah, might work.
Okay. Oh, fair enough. Oh, okay. So I did want to make mention of Caden Prebo, since he finally got a start this month. Unfortunately, it was against New Jersey. and I wanted to ask you guys, what do you think? Do you think he's going to get another start for Montreal, or do you think he'll be claimed on waiver wire or possibly even be sent down?
I think all of those things could be true.
It's a safe response.
he'll play another game. There must have been a reason why they surprise started him like that with very little notice. Maybe there was a scout that wanted to see him, or nothing's wrong with Jake Allen, right?
Not that we know of.
Surprising, but you know, it's a back-to-back game, and maybe they wanted to give Monty a little bit more of a break, and might as well see what the kid's got and let him have a game, because Jake obviously wasn't going to play that one, but at this point, Jake's the starter until he loses, in my opinion. So he gets the net back tomorrow night against Columbus. And if he wins, he should be playing Saturday, and he should be playing every game until he loses or there's a back-to-back. But yeah, I think Prebo plays another game for the Canadians almost guaranteed, unless he gets traded.
I wouldn't want them to set Montembeau quite that much. I'd like to see him get. And Allen degrades quickly once he starts playing too much. I would balance it a bit more.
Yeah. You got to ride the hot hand.
There's basically no upside to having three goalies in the NHL right now.
It's never worked.
It's never worked.
Do you think Marty's mandate this year is to like make the Canadians as good as possible? Like, you think his number one mandate is to make the playoffs and get the Canadians in the playoffs? Or is his number one mandate to make sure that the young players on the Canadians all have great development years? What do you think is more important for the Canadians? Like, what is the direction Marty's given by Jeff Gorton and Hughes?
I don't know, but I hope that it's developed players, because that's what gets you to the playoffs. And when you have a team that young, if they're not developing, you're not making the playoffs.
Like, perfect. So if that's the case, then Caden should be getting lots of games.
Yeah.
To see what he can do.
Yeah, I'd say it's got to be more on the development side too, and Montreal knows that they had to keep Primo around because he could be picked up, and like we were talking on the last podcast, Tampa was in a position where I'm sure they'd like to take a stab at picking up a goalie like that that's been developed somewhere else for a while. I think I heard on one of the broadcasts, there's something like four or five other NHL teams that also are carrying three goalies at the moment. And so I guess everybody's in a protectionism kind of a mode.
They should all corroborate and all send their goalies to the minors on the same day. So only one of them loses, like a little lottery game.
Ah, well, you never know. Maybe that's what's going to happen.
the next back-to-back is November 11th and 12th. So 11th is a Saturday against the Bruins. So obviously Primo's not going to play that, but maybe the Sunday against the Canucks.
Mm.
So I don't know if that's okay. A long time for him to sit. Well, yeah. It's not so long, but I mean, they would have put him on waivers already if they didn't care about losing him. So
yeah.
Well, somebody else, he has value to them or to another team, right?
I just don't know. Is he the one that they're shopping or they're you know, because Allen must have the most. Well, maybe Montembeau has great value because he only makes $1 million a year.
I would imagine that Gordon would trade any one of the three for the right package. I don't think any of them he would consider not to move. I think if they're the right package, all of them are available.
Yeah. What's the right package for someone like Primo, like a fifth round pick?
Yeah, see, that's what I mean. You got to figure out what's it worth to the Canadians to trade him. You know, if they feel like, oh, you know, we're going to have to waive him at some point, let's get some asset for him because we're going to keep Montembeau and Allen and but there's not enough offers for them. Then, yeah, maybe that is all he's worth as a fifth round pick because it's, you know, one more ticket in a lottery.
Okay. You know, it's funny. I think about Major League Baseball when it comes to this because they have a rule that's a similar situation to this. So when they have a younger player and then they want to send him down to the farm and they're out of options where they're eligible to be picked up on a waiver wire, or I think they have a different name for it. If a team takes him and they have to keep him on their main squad, and if they try to send him down to the minors, then it's an automatic situation where it can go back to the original team if they want them back, that is. I wonder if something like that should be adopted in the NHL.
I thought there was something like that in the NHL.
Yeah, I thought that was the situation. If you claim somebody
for at least in a period of days, they have to be on your roster for 30 days or something like that afterwards.
Yeah.
Then after that, they'd have to go through waivers again.
Oh, okay. I wasn't aware of that.
Because that already happened with, what's his name from Ottawa, Lassie Thompson.
Yeah, and Anaheim. It's only on sending down. It's not on calling up anymore. On calling up, you always get them through.
Okay.
You can only be claiming going down.
Anaheim claimed Thompson off Ottawa and then waived him and Ottawa claimed him back.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't realize that. I remember Ottawa getting him back, but I didn't realize that it was going to happen. I thought it was a situation where Ottawa was just eligible to take him and no other team before ahead of them could, and so they did.
Yeah, you're right. That is it. They don't have an automatic pick, but nobody else did take him. I see what the difference is, that the losing team has first dibs, basically.
Okay, that's okay.
The way hockey works, but you usually
okay,
it
good.
Does happen. The players get reclaimed sometimes.
Okay, I understand better. Thanks. Yeah. Okay, well, that's all I had for Habs topic. So I wanted to go around the hockey world a little bit. And since Alex Ovechkin has been a favorite topic of ours in previous podcasts, and we all got a chance to watch him in the early the season against the Habs, it's clear he's not off to a great start. Didn't score in that game, and I think he had went, I don't know how many games he's gone now without scoring.
He scored an empty netter tonight.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And he scored last night against the Leafs. So he's got 2-2 now. And last night against the Leafs, I think he finally heard that he'd gone a couple games without getting a shot. So he outshot the Montreal Canadiens last night. Ovechkin had 74 shots last night. Oh, sorry, 14, but that's still quite a bit.
14 shots. Really?
Wow.
He had 14 shots last night in less than 20 minutes, almost a shot a minute.
Oh, wow. My God. Oh, I did not hear that. Okay. Well, so do you think
shooting percentage, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I think Ovechkin's going to put up 30, 35 this year and maybe break the record next year. It's going to be real close to breaking it at the end of next year. But if not, it'll be the year after that. But he's going to score 25 plus. He won't score less than 25. I would imagine by December 1st, he's going to have 8 to 10 goals.
Okay. I'm thinking this may be too small of a sample still to know, but there is some signs that he is starting a decline. So he's gonna have to pick it up if he's gonna break that record.
Yeah, but they've been predicting his decline since 2016. So
correct.
I don't know. Okay. Is he declining or is the team around him declining? Because it's like,
there you go. Yes, the team around him sucks now.
Backstrom stinks.
Yeah,
Tom Wilson's not as good anymore, and they just signed him to another 7 years. That's an old team. They should have realized a few years ago after the cup, okay, well, it's not working. Let's keep Ovechkin and get younger, faster players to feed them.
faster being
that's tough to look like that though.
It's one case where the analytics and the eye test match up perfectly in that Washington is a extremely slow team.
Yeah.
From top to bottom. And the young players they do have are slow.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Strom is an example, and he can't skate. None of the Stroms can really know how to skate. But yeah, Kuznetsov is another one that's not very good anymore. You know, he's not as
right.
Famous. It's yeah. I think he still breaks the record. I always thought that he would play until he breaks the record. So even if it took him another 5 years, I think he would just play. But and then they'll just throw him out on the power play. Like at some point, that's what he wants, right? And that's what people want to see in Washington. They know they're not competing.
Maybe.
So
yeah, do you think he's gonna finish off his career in Washington, or do you think he'll be a trade deadline pickup?
No, he'll never leave Washington. I actually think that it's probably more valuable to this point for the Capitals franchise for Ovechkin to break that record wearing a Capitals jersey than for them to win another Stanley Cup. If he breaks that record, the number of Capitals Ovechkin T-shirts, posters, hats, jerseys. NFTs, you won't believe all the stuff they'll be selling of Ovechkin. People will be traveling to Mother Russia to get on the Russian gas to feel just like Alex.
All right. Okay. Well, until that time, we'll keep the Ovi watch going in terms of his goal record pursuit.
Was it 896? Is that
something record? Like that? Yeah, I think 70 goals away or something like that.
Oh yeah, that's like 2 years for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two and a half, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Exactly.
Sold. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, and the other thing I wanted to mention too, and since it's pretty timely since it just came up yesterday, there was a team vote that took place yesterday, the 24th, where they were talking about changing the draft day event format, I guess. And apparently the majority of the teams want to make a change. So I was going to bring it back to you guys. Should the league make this change to something more of a NFL style of draft, or should they keep their current format that they've been using for years?
I think the NFL does the draft the best. I don't like the idea of Gary Bettman just announcing everything, but I think they should keep it to one city where the excitement is there. Like it was absolutely buzzing in Montreal, right? But even if it was in Toronto or something, or New York, like those are great cities to have it, but not like don't move it around to like, oh, it's in Nashville. Like they don't care. And fans don't want to travel that far. And so, I don't know.
I don't know, but Nashville is a pretty big crowd in Nashville.
Arizona. Yeah, I mean, it's like fun to party and stuff, and they'll sell out. But I mean, I don't know.
But think about how packed the Mullet Arena could be.
Yeah, that's true. But I've heard some teams don't want it at all. So if it's going to rotate around, it's going to be a select number of them.
It's probably loser teams that we don't want to go there anyways, right? So
I think Dawn, the vote did pass, though. They're done. I think this is the draft. Will be moving to.
Oh, I was reading. Not quite. They're still going to bring it up again at the next GM's meeting, which I think is either November or December. And maybe then it becomes the final vote, or maybe then they bring it back. I don't know. It was a little confusing why they needed a second time to talk about it. But the winds of change seem to be in the air that they are likely going to make a change.
So is it like just the players are there and there's war rooms that are not there?
Yeah, exactly. Like they would go NFL style. So it would cut to the Canadians, like for example, if it was the Cole Caulfield draft, it would show the Philadelphia Flyers room and then make their pick, and then it would show the Canadians room just getting like really excited, jumped up like I'm not sure if you guys have ever seen the Minnesota Vikings drafting after the Philadelphia Eagles, like when the Eagles took I can't remember, maybe it was Aguilar or somebody like that, and then the Vikings picked Justin Jefferson. And as soon as the pick was in, all the Viking head office people are just going absolutely insane that they're getting Justin Jefferson. They're so excited and worked out well for Minnesota. But yeah, some of those scenes would be neat because obviously you like at the draft when everyone's there, you would never see those reactions because you got to be professional and you'd be like, excellent pick. Very nice pick, Mr. Bergevin, or whatever they'd have to say, like to be polite to each other. But like if they're, you know, with their, just with their own crew, they could be going nuts. So that's the good thing. One negative thing about decentralizing the draft is it really is the only time when the whole hockey world is together. So from like the fans' perspective, that where somebody like really likes that event, and it's the it is the only time of year where every single team is kind of invested in the same thing for one brief period of time. So that's kind of neat. And also for like young aspiring people in the industry, it's I'm sure a great networking opportunity for them to talk with people from different teams, you know, not necessarily, you know, in hockey operations, but there always seems to be a team of like 40 people that go. So I'm sure they're not all in hockey operations. So I'm sure it's a cool networking thing, or even if even the people in hockey operations for some one-on-one networking. So
It is long though with the you know, the every team goes up there with 37 people and they're all like they want to thank everything, like congratulations on the fifth win of the season in Columbus, you know, like it's just like, oh my god, just shut up. And then someone died and he was not even a good player, and you're just like, I don't care.
Right.
Not, I mean, there's draft day yet.
Yes, I have. I thought I'd mention that to you guys.
Yeah, we talked about it. We talked about it.
Oh, maybe we did? Okay. Yeah, and it is a good movie. So. Forgetful. Oh, that's that's okay. So it is a good movie, and I've always liked Kevin Costner, so it wasn't a hard one to watch. So you know, obviously, teams are going to be, or owners are going to be able to spend less money by not having to ship 30 people over to whatever destination city for the event. Yeah. So, and the fact that it always coincides and is tied too closely to the start of the free agency is another hiccup. But yeah, they are going to miss. And I mean, I think Elliot Friedman was somebody I was reading recently where he was talking about how if it happens, he's going to miss that time because it is a chance to see a lot of people all together. There's a lot more networking going on in times like that. And I'm sure the bars do great business. So,
yeah, exactly. I don't know. Draft day is actually the only NFL draft I've ever watched.
Okay.
Real thing. I've only watched the movie.
Oh, I can say the same because I'm not. I don't follow NFL. So, fair enough.
It is much better though. I think Jonathan. I know he's a big football fan, but like I find that draft is.
I find the NFL draft better. The only thing better about the NHL draft is that all the fans hate Gary Bettman and Boom. And I don't really think NFL fans for the most part hate Roger Goodell very much. Like maybe there's a couple of boos and stuff for him, but he's up there 32 times for each team. So it's not like they're gonna boo him nonstop. Whereas, you know, it is fun to listen to Gary Bettman get booed every time he gets anywhere near the stage and microphone. It's wicked.
NBA does the same thing too. It's just the commissioner announcing the pick.
Okay.
Yeah, with a bunch of short guys.
Well, hopefully Gary doesn't mispronounce anybody's name, and if he can pull that off, then maybe he'll be successful.
Oh, and I wonder if he'd be scared about that. Imagine if he pulled a Carey Price on the first pick.
Yeah,
David.
Speaking of bad, is anybody else tired of hearing quotes from Ryan Reeves yet? Like. It seems like the only value that he's providing to the Leafs is monopolizing all the airtime so the Stars don't have to talk to the press.
I would say Revo's doing exactly what he's paid to do then. He's a mouthpiece for the Leafs, so that way nobody else, none of the star players have to worry about talking to the media, because the media is like, well, I'm going to talk to Matthews and like, what's the best I'm going to get? I'm going to see him with his shirt off and his cool chest tattoo and be cut off the air in 2 seconds. Or I can talk to Revo and he's going to say some type of crazy line about how he hates Corey Perry and wants to kill him, or how Arbor Jack Eyes the dirtiest player in the league for attacking him from behind mercilessly with a machete. so he's always got something to say. And I think that's perfect for the Leafs. I bet you they would not want him to change a single bit of what he's done so far. He's got you talking about him.
Well, he might want him to skate faster, be more effective. Score a goal.
I think it is the worst fourth line. It's the worst fourth line in the league, I think, analytically.
Yeah.
Hmm.
What I loved about that one on Perry was Luke Richardson. He's like, somebody asked him about Reeves' comments, and he said Reeves was chirping Perry from on the bench, and he said, "You're scared of me, Perry says, I've never been scared of anyone in my life. And he went out and whomped him and then scored the game-winning goal. And Richardson says, so who had the bigger impact on the game?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, good. Perry's not really scared of anyone in he has all the chirps against Reeves. Like, what is Reeves going to say to him? Like, yeah. Corey Perry's done every single thing that a hockey player can do.
Yeah, right? I know. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
So, on to Columbus. Are they playing in Montreal or in Columbus?
On Thursday. Oh, I don't know off the top of my head. Somebody going to look it up? Or
it's in Montreal.
Okay.
Yeah, oh, thank God. I hate the fucking cannon.
Pardon. Yes.
Oh, you'd hear it a lot. That's for sure.
No. Going back to what we were talking about, a trade with Boston. The last trade with Boston was in 2001, where Eric Weinreich went to Boston for Patrick Travers. That was the last time the Canadians and Boston had a trade.
Oh,
did Montreal get Weinreich or Travers?
Travers.
Terrible trade.
Yeah. Travers was terrible.
Yes.
He did not live up to his name.
Number 54 on the ice, number 99 in your program. You wanted him near the bottom. You didn't want to see him.
2001. Yeah. So, again, still in the realm of Uhl's reign of error. So
yes.
God, nothing could be worse than that. Even, like, now, it's still not as bad as that.
That's true. We see some hope because there is some development. There are some bright spots. And
have made a trade, I don't have this feeling of overwhelming dread and grief before I actually hear who's involved in it.
Yeah, no kidding. That pit in the stomach that starts to gnaw at you.
Yeah.
This schedule is crazy, though. Like, how do you play the Leafs in the first game of the season? Next time you play them is in March?
March, yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I'd like to see more divisional heavy schedules. I agree completely. Mm-hmm. Play everyone outside, and maybe it would suck because if you only played the Rangers twice and all those other teams twice that are still in the Eastern Conference. But I agree. I'd be a much bigger fan of, you know, 7 or 8 games against at least the Bruins, Leafs, and Sens. You know, Tampa and Florida. Nah, no interest in playing them. Boring. But it'd be a lot more fun to play those teams that you really hate a lot more often.
I just did a quick check on the schedule. They played the Leafs 3 times in the preseason, though. I think maybe somebody must have thought, well, we can't keep playing them that often.
Craziness.
Yeah.
Yeah, the schedule's been weird, though. They played like no games at the start of the season, and now they've played, what, 4 this week?
Yep. Same number of games as Columbus, both 3-2-1 teams.
Well, I mean, look at the... Yesterday, the NHL scheduled every single team on the same night that there's a game 7 in the playoffs. You know, you just kind of like,
that just worked out unlucky.
Yeah,
did you see what they did in the States for that?
Nope.
I heard about it.
They ran like a red zone on all the TV, on all the NHL networks. So they, normally they would say they were going to broadcast a game, but they did that, have all the teams play at the same time or as close to the same time as possible and do red zone. So they would go to like every power play if there was a penalty shot, and they'd have a guy lead in on a slight delay. And apparently it worked pretty well.
How did it work in Canada with the regional blackouts?
The NHL's had problems with TV deals for a long time, and they certainly have not made it any better. Although Vegas has done something cool. I'm not sure if we've talked about this, but I guess either starting this year or starting next year, Vegas has sold a streaming service directly from them to watch all the Vegas Knights games. You can buy, I can't remember, or maybe it's not all of them, but it's at least a portion.
Yeah, it's this year.
The Canadians are considering that next year.
Yeah, because I guess the contracts are running TV out. Deals up. Yeah.
Well, if in the Golden Knights and a couple other teams, the company that owned their rights went bankrupt, so they had no choice. They had no provider for their regional packages. So
people are cutting the cord.
Yeah.
Yeah, they think that was the reason. Well, yeah, that was that Bailey company, I think.
Yeah.
Bally's.
And it affected MLB and I think some of the NBA teams.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if you said, here's all 82 Habs games, no matter where you are, for $100 for the season or whatever, you know how much more money they would make?
I think so, too.
Yeah.
If they made it easy, like, and it worked everywhere, like, okay, if I decide I'm going to just take a couple of weeks in Uzbekistan. Is it going to work there? Yeah, it'd be good. Like, who's got the Uzbekistani Canadians game rights? I don't want to have to search that when I get there.
Well, we'll see. Maybe next year they'll do something about that. All right, guys. On that note, I think let's wrap it up. Thank you very much, all, for joining me this evening.
Thanks, gentlemen. It was a pleasure, as always.
Thanks again, guys.
Good night, gentlemen.
Good night. Oh, go Habs go.
Go Habs go.
Where the children of tomorrow dream away.